And a good Thursday morning. Welcome in Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter, Nick Keyser, with you on this rainy Thursday. It did get cold. Everybody was bursting my bubble yesterday when I said it was spring and all that. But that's okay. It'll come back. It's, you know, April showers and cools things off. It's okay. We'll be fine. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Doing well.
So we're going to start with quarterback talk because we haven't talked about quarterbacks and the Tennessee Titans enough this offseason.
We have been just...
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. This is what I tell people. Like, this is that time of year where it's, you know, you talk about a lot of the same stuff. But I'm going to put a different twist on it today, and we're going to have fun with the audience. Audience participation is mandatory in this question. Our question of the day, it's on our Twitter account at 1025 The Game. It's a poll question. You can vote in it. I'm actually leaving it up through the midday show because I have a feeling they might hit on it too. Mm-hmm. You have to pick the quarterback of the future for the Tennessee Titans football team from these four quarterbacks. Write-ins will not be accepted. And I can tell you right now, Lamar Jackson is not one of them. I don't even want to hear it. It has to be one of these four. This is the quarterback of the future. And I got this based on, obviously, the draft and then a conversation that I heard Robbie and Joe and Junie have with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. So the four are Trey Lance, which apparently you could get pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. Trey Lance is
the first one. Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, or Hendon Hooker. One of those four is the quarterback of the future for the Titans. You have to pick. Who will it be? I asked Joe Rexrode on the way out. I got his answer, and I can tell you, his answer and my answer are the same answer.
I know what they are.
Yeah, of course.
Can I say it?
Hendon Hooker.
There you go.
My answer is Hendon Hooker.
You know what confuses me? Is that no one was talking about, like I feel like you were on the Levis train, you know, Joe's on the Bryce Young train. And now I feel was on the Bryce Young train.
It changes.
And then I feel like, right, like I was listening to Jared versus Joe last night. Now everyone's on the Hendon Hooker train.
Well, everyone,
Caroline is.
Sure.
Jared is. You guys are. I'm like, we had a front row seat and watched him be the best quarterback in college football for a majority of the college football season. And nobody was talking about him as a pro.
Nobody was talking about him.
Bring me the receipts.
That is not true.
People were not talking about him.
I have brought him up a lot. Now, yes, I was on the Will Levis train, and but I kept using the phrase, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid on Will Levis. And I still like Will. I still like some things about Will Levis. If the Titans end up with him, I'm not going to be, you know, mad about it. But I've always thought that Hendon Hooker was being punished for two reasons. He was being punished for the ACL injury, and he was being punished for his age. And honestly, Charles is really the only one that keeps bringing up the age that I've heard. I don't think a lot of football people, it bothers them all that much because they look at it as, well, if you can get 10 years out of him as a starter, I'd say that's a win. But I've always thought that Hendon Hooker could translate. Now, I may not have been on the Hendon Hooker to the Titans train, which I think is what you're referring to.
Well, no, I mean, just...
And I've even been hesitant at 11.
I mean, just in like, during college football season, he just wasn't talked about as a pro translating to the next level. I mean, people were like, yeah, he'll be a solid backup in the league. And I'm just asking, what has changed in people's minds? Because the ACL injury wasn't until one of the last games of the season.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
That is my question. Because it's not like... It's not like Anthony Richardson where he had a pro day and he blew people's minds away. Okay, I understand why minds changed. Is it just because for so long he was viewed as he'll maybe be a backup in the league. Joe, I will give Joe credit, had been on the train of, I think he can be a, a Kirk Cousins comparison.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, yeah.
He said, I think he can be a Kirk Cousins type player. He'd been saying that for a while, but the conversation was he'll be a second rounder. He'll be a second round guy, but I believe he could be a guy like Kirk Cousins. So then I ask, what has changed? Is it just that people are paying more attention to him? But I don't really buy that because he was one of the best quarterbacks in college football.
Well, I think people have done a deeper study on him, and I reference Bruce Feldman, who was on with us yesterday from The Athletic, and he has in his mock draft that you can read on The Athletic that one coach, you know, said, like, you know, when I first, you know, watch, you know, it's like, okay, this guy's okay. But if you do a deeper dive into it, you realize, like, oh, wow, he's legit. He can make the throws. He can do those things. I think what made people hesitant and act the way that you're talking about, because, one, this time last year, we weren't even talking about him for the Heisman. Now, I will say that I was one person that said, I'd dabble. And I wasn't like sitting here going, Hendon Hooker's going to win the Heisman. But I'm like, I would, you know, he could be in the conversation. And my thought process on that was the offense, that the offense was going to elevate him to that point. I think that's why, though, people are hesitant, because they don't feel like Josh Heupel's offense can translate to the NFL, which I actually disagree with. I think it could. I mean, and then what happened? And then as the season went on, you start hearing, well, what if Josh Heupel went to the NFL? You know, that conversation started. So it's the roller coaster ride of the pundits and all of us and, you know, watching things play out. And 1 week it's like, oh, yeah, he's the best ever. And he throws an interception. Oh, he's awful. And, you know, that's just kind of what it is. But I hear what you're saying now of, you know, that it feels like it picked up. Later in the season, and then even after he got hurt, of, you know, all of a sudden he's an NFL quarterback. But I mean, think about people we've talked to that have said he could be a top 10, top 5 pick, but the ACL probably knocked him back.
I mean, yeah, I get all of what you're saying, Chase, but I still go back to, which doesn't really matter now, was the conversation was, yeah, I mean, he could be, or he's a great college quarterback. He should have gone to New York for the Heisman. If he didn't hurt himself, he probably would have been in New York, you know, could have won the Heisman. But it was, yeah, but his game probably won't translate to the NFL. But I don't put much merit on the age. I just think for me, it's how is he after the ACL? I mean, I'll put him in the same conversation as a Anthony Richardson and a Will Levis, because those are just as much question marks, I think. You know, you can question Hendon Hooker's age and you can question him coming off of his ACL and the offense that he's in. But then on the flip side, you have guys like Anthony Richardson and Will Levis who have the arm strength, you know, the athletic ability. You know, you can throw an absolute bomb but have accuracy issues and have issues, you know, turning over the football and things like that. You have two completely different things in them. And I think Josh Allen has actually done a lot of great things for the guys like Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, because I think people have seen, okay, you can be this big-bodied guy, you know, coming out of college. He had a rough first 2 years, and people thought, oh gosh, here we go, he's a bust. You know, why'd they pick him? Why'd they draft him? And then look what he's done. So I actually think Josh Allen has, you know, paved a way for guys like Anthony Richardson and Will Levis. But, I mean, Hendon Hooker, I mean, I don't know how he's going to translate. I don't even know when he's going to be healthy. But
sure. So what's your answer?
I don't have one yet.
What do you mean you don't have one yet?
I don't have one yet. I will have one by the end of the show.
We got to give her to the end of the show. She asked me.
But here's the thing. You came up with the questions. You already knew what your answer was.
Well, that's true.
Fair.
That's fair.
Ding, ding, ding.
But have we not been talking about this for months now?
Yeah, we have. But the Trey Lance thing makes things way more interesting.
But even that's been out there.
Well, no. Oh, sorry. Charles Robinson coming on saying a third round pick for him.
Sure.
Because I look at all of these quarterbacks, probably other than a C.J. Stroud and a Bryce Young. I look at the ones that you put out there. You put Trey Lance, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, and Hendon Hooker. And I honestly kind of look at them all very, very similar. And I'm leaning towards Trey Lance because you're giving up a third-round pick for him. A guy like Hendon Hooker we don't know how much buzz is going to continue. You might have to use your 11th overall pick to go and get him. He might not fall to the second round.
Right.
Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, right? You're gambling on somebody potentially falling to 11 because I think there is a scenario where all three could go in the top 10. I do believe somebody will fall. But I look at them all having question marks with them. And I look at this Tennessee Titans team and all the needs that they all the positions they need to fill. I would feel more comfortable giving up a third round pick for Trey Lance rather than using my first round pick on a guy that I'm still having question marks about.
Yeah, I mean, look, if all it costs you is a third round pick, which we'll discuss that a little later on. But you can vote in our poll question at 1025 The Game on Twitter, and I've retweeted it. Michelle's retweeted it. The Titans quarterback of the future, you have to pick from these four: Trey Lance, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, or Hendon Hooker. Now, Jim has taken exception to our poll question, and he's texted in on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What a joke survey. All the big oranges will vote for Hooker. Okay, I understand, and he is currently leading. But, Jim, you didn't give a vote. So what's your give a vote. I mean, it's look, you have choices. I'm not making this a UT thing.
We do live in Vols country. I mean,
we
on.
Do, but if you think of realistic – the realistic, and that's what I'm being here, realistic options for quarterback of the future, would those not be the top four?
No, I mean, yeah. You could throw Tannehill. I mean, who knows?
Well, I'm talking about beyond Tannehill. Like, Tannehill could be here this year. Even if they were to trade a third-round pick for Trey Lance, you keep Tannehill this year, I think.
Yeah.
So,
I don't even know what Trey Lance's health looks like right now.
We'll discuss that more, the Ryan Tannehill part of this conversation, coming up next, because Charles Robinson had some interesting thoughts on him. We'll do that here on Chase and Michelle on a Thursday, 1025, 1063 The Game.
A third-round pick for Trey Lance, that's got to be enticing.
But here's the thing. I don't think that's what they're asking for. I think that's what they think is available for him. Like, I think they think that's what this guy's market is now. That it's just because, and what blew my mind when I heard the number or when I heard that, I'm like, 30. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And the response to me was, explain to me why he's worth more. That doesn't have anything to do with what the 49ers paid to go and get him. And I thought about it and I'm like, huh. All right. Well, when I actually sit and I look at what he's produced, the number of games he's played, the fact that, you know, he's already been injured, hasn't played a lot of football in a lot of years, really effectively. I mean, you have to go back how many years now to find, 3 years plus to find when he played a lot of football and made you feel like he was somebody that you wanted to spend all the assets on. It's pretty mind-blowing, but, yeah, I mean, I can't. There's like a 30 for 30 thing on what exactly happened with Trey Lance, because I've never seen anything like this before. And I, me personally, I'm like, I don't know, as a staff, there's most of the time I've covered the NFL is like 20 plus years. Most staffs will go, we'll just eat. We'll carry him around for a while. Like we can't, the optics of her are too bad. We'll carry him around for a while because we can't flush him for such a little return, and it just looks too horrible. But as you said, Joe, if you get something functionally out of Sam Darnold and Brock Purdy comes back healthy, at that point, nobody's going to care. That fan base can be like, whatever, let's just move on.
Yeah, you're
like,
winning. Our team. Yeah.
Charles Robinson earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road with Joe Rex Road and Junie Riddle. Welcome back, Chase and Michelle, Chase McCabe. Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser, the reporter, with you. By the way, we got to address something with Nick, an idea that came up on Twitter yesterday.
Ooh, I did see it.
I think is a good idea, so we might have to institute that. So
please enlighten me.
Oh, we will. That's a tease. We will. You got to wait, just like the audience.
You will be enlightened at some point.
You will be enlightened, young man. But our question on 1025 The Game, our Twitter account, you have to pick the Titans quarterback of the future from these four. And it's Trey Lance, who you just heard Charles talking about, as you could potentially get him for a third-round pick. And I think what he said there that's really the most telling is they think that's what they can get for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm them and they think that all they can get is a third-round pick, then I'm probably hanging on to him right now. I mean, to see if he can get healthy and, you know, I don't – The 49ers are fascinating with what works with quarterback. I mean, is Kyle Shanahan this much of a boy genius that he could take Nick Kiezer and turn him into Brett Favre? Like, I mean, that's what it feels like sometimes. The last,
he didn't even smirk back there.
I mean, he is all business. He is all business back there today.
Well, I mean, Chase, to your point though, right? They found something in Brock Purdy. They probably knew. I mean, they saw him day in and day out, but I can't imagine they expected he was going to do what he did all the way through the playoffs. I mean, it ended up, obviously we know the story how it ended up. He has the elbow injury, and
yeah.
I don't even know how he did one throwing motion after he got hurt there, and now he didn't need the full Tommy Johns, but there's still a question mark, and Darnold's up there. But, right, that's the offense we talk about. Kyle Shanahan, he can plug in a quarterback who is fine. We talk about that is the formula that they need here with a guy like Ryan Tannehill. They should just figure out how to trade, how to swap. I mean, the thing is, the San Francisco 49ers already signed Sam Darnold. But
And that's where I was going with that. That's fascinating.
They need to figure out how about this? No third round pick. We'll give you Ryan Tannehill and we'll just take Trey Lance.
Wow. Think about that for a second.
I mean, I think they'd be a lot better if they had him over Sam Darnold. They have a situation where Ryan Tannehill, I believe, would thrive in that offense, right? Christian McCaffrey, Debo, Kittle. I mean, the offensive line, the defense.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Well, now you mentioned the Ryan Tannehill part of this, though. You know that is intriguing, and if you miss Charles Robinson, don't every Thursday at 8 for two segments. He's fascinating. Got Grace. Fascinating. That's our word of the day. But I think the Ryan Tannehill part is one to pay attention to. And this was Charles earlier today talking about that aspect with the Titans.
More often than not, the way you find out who's interested in what is you will hear, oh, well, actually, this team is trying to find a potential landing spot for this player they already have. So that player would be Ryan Tannehill. That's where this comes from. You say, well, how would he know that, where would this start, that the Titans are interested in a quarterback? Well, usually that comes out not because the Titans call around telling people they're interested in a quarterback. They call around asking, are you interested in Ryan Tannehill? Doesn't necessarily mean they're shopping him. It's more of a pocket listing. You're trying to figure out, hey, if there's a quarterback there we like, if we can either move for a quarterback, someone slips that we like and we can trade and get in the right range, do we have a spot to potentially lay off the current starter that we have who would no longer factor into our plans? Because if you draft a quarterback and then try to move Ryan Tannehill after, you've lost any leverage you have whatsoever. So what you do is before the draft, you start figuring out, are there landing spots if this ultimately works out? Doesn't mean that they're absolutely committed to Ryan Tannehill. It just means that they're trying to figure out if the draft goes their way and the players that they might like at the quarterback position become available, now they know the avenues they have to operate. So I do think that the Titans absolutely have done their homework on quarterbacks in this draft. I would have no doubt whatsoever, particularly among the top four or five, that they have a couple that they would be interested in. And I think that they've spoken to other NFL teams and asked the question, hey, would you have any interest in Ryan Tannehill, just to do their due diligence?
That was Charles Robinson this morning. And basically the premise of the question was moving up to 3, where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought his, and I love the phrase inside baseball, but his
yes.
explanation was spot on of, well, there's probably more to it. And, you know, a lot of times when, you know, rumors like that get out, a team wants it to get out. It's a smoke screen. It's going to get other movement going along. So if there's a, and Jared was talking about this some yesterday, if there's a player that the Titans love at 11 or around there that you know, if they start this smoke screen of they actually want to move up and then other teams try to leapfrog them, then they end up staying at 11 and they get the guy they wanted all along.
It's all a mind game sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, teams do that all the time. But he is right, though. If they do want to move on from Tannehill, and I've kind of wondered, I know I shouldn't do this, but like I do right now because I don't know Rand Carthon and I don't know how Rand Carthon's going to think and what this is going to look like. I have sat here and I'm going, okay, if John Robinson was still the GM, would he be shopping Tannehill? And I think the answer is yes. I think he would. I think that John thought in a way similar to where he came from of, you get good years out of a guy, and then you try and get something for them while they still have value. And even though he doesn't have a ton of value with the contract, I still think there's value. And if you had gone to the Jets, you know, before this whole Aaron Rodgers thing started, you know, teams like that, that's where I think you try and get, you know, you could have made the move. Now, ultimately, they have to do it. But so I think, to Charles's point, you got to do this before the draft, because after the draft, you're kind of stuck. You've lost all your leverage at that point. But it is such a fascinating discussion. There's that word again, that continues with quarterbacks and with the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, likely we get to August and Tannehill's quarterback, and maybe they've drafted somebody behind him, but it's just fun to talk about now.
No, I agree. And you have to have these conversations, especially if you're Rand Carthon. You are open to any and every conversation, being that you're still evaluating everybody on this team. You're still, you know, getting yourself like into this organization. And I mean, it's your first time doing it. You need to hear every option possible. And the quarterbacks in this draft are appealing, and there's not just one guy. There are a bunch of different guys that potentially could slip, and you know that Ryan Tannehill still has value. As much as his contract, there is a big cap hit. He actually, you know, when you look at the contract as a whole, is a cheaper quarterback in this league for his age and what he has done just based off of the quarterback market, you know, skyrocketing. But I look at a team like the Jets. If we asked Charles Robinson about that, he said he was 99% sure they'll get it done, he said, but he was surprised that the Packers have held their ground this long. Could there be, you know, a slight chance that the Jets would be open to a guy like Ryan Tannehill? We talked about this discussion earlier in the offseason. I mentioned the 49ers, right? You can look and find teams that have rosters constructed where they're just missing a guy at the quarterback. I mean, I look at what the Giants were able to do with a guy like Daniel Jones. I think Tannehill's better than that. So, you know, there could be options, and I'm sure by calling around, they've gotten a feel of, okay, who is not drafting a quarterback this year and kind of needs a, not just a bridge guy, but needs somebody to get them over the hump a little bit, and they could still be a playoff team based on how it's constructed. And I think Ryan Tannehill could be a guy for some of those organizations.
She's Michelle Knezevic. I am Chase McCabe. Our poll question of the day, you have to pick the future Titans quarterback from these four: Trey Lance, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, Hendon Hooker. Vote in our poll at 102.5 The Game. You can also text in and give your thoughts on that, or call 615-737-1025. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll look at some results and get your thoughts on that coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
But a lot of teams meet with a lot of guys. How much do you really look into the guys that the Titans are meeting with?
I think it makes a lot of sense for Hooker and the Titans to pair up here in this draft. I'll start by saying that. But keep in mind, all the meeting reports, like Hooker was the first player to meet with the Titans, or the Titans were the first team to meet with Hooker whenever Hooker was at the Senior Bowl. But he can meet with all 32, and all 32 should take the opportunity to chat with every single player there. There's not a limit on that. Combine, different story based on, of course, his knee, and based on location. This visit doesn't count against their number of visits that they can have in the facility, because he's the in-state prospect. So they should use all avenues to chat with him and figure out everything, put him on the board, make sure he's a match with with Kelly and everything else. But I read into the visits because, and especially the guys who are mocked to go like third to sixth round, because at that point, I think teams are more likely and high probability that they go with the player that matches who they are and the personality and the traits that fit the organization, the coaching staff, the head coach, the general manager, more so than the first or second round picks where, oh, he's the highest guy on our board. By the time the third round rolls around, you go all over the place with projections because it's very difficult to figure out which position of need meets the quality of the football player for that team.
That was Jonathan Hutton yesterday on Caroline Willie and D. Mace. Chase and Michelle, Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. The reporter Nick Kieser on the ones and twos with some Bobby Brown as well. And Hendon Hooker is a name that I know we're going to keep talking about until the draft. I like him a lot, and I agree with Hutton, and I probably credit Hutton for putting a lot of this in my head with him. Because we've been talking about it for a long time, both on and off the air. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of things in play here. One, Charles London. And I think Charles London is going to be key in whoever the Titans quarterback of the future is. And I think that and I'm trying to talk and watch Tiger all at the same time as he put one in the bunker. But anyway. I think that the Titans, you know, having Charles London is going to be key to develop, you know, Hendon Hooker or whoever the quarterback happens to be. I do think that the Tennessee factor is a big one. I mean, you're going to sell extra tickets if you get a Tennessee guy. I mean, you just are. That's not the reason you do it, but it is certainly something that, you know, is going to come up. And I think that he has the potential and has the arm strength, and as long as he's in the right system, can be an NFL quarterback, even with his age and even with the ACL. You know, the ACL nowadays, that is, yes, it's a concern, but it's also medicine's come a long way.
Yeah,
so, it not this year, and, like, he's not a day one starter, but you don't need him to be.
No, and obviously that's if you stay with Ryan Tannehill. But with Hendon Hooker, he's a guy who, yeah, does have that ACL injury, but I think he's also – created just he's made a good name for himself going to the Senior Bowl, the Combine, his pro day, just being there and showing that even though he can't do a lot of the physical things because of his knee and because of him rehabbing, he's still been able to have those conversations. And was it Bruce Feldman with us yesterday said that some quarterback coaches said that he was the most impressive as far as the interview portion of things at the Combine, which isn't surprising. I mean, the people around him, the people who talk about him, just, you know, his leadership skills are fantastic. And I think you could tell by what this Tennessee team did this year. And I think one of the biggest questions for me is where could you get him in the draft? If you could get Hendon Hooker in the second round, which I think was more likely a couple weeks ago, a couple of months ago.
Now.
I don't know how likely that is, because when we talked about this situation of when we were talking about this, I mean, we've been having this conversation for a while now, but I absolutely loved the idea of getting, you know, an offensive lineman at 11, whether it's, you know, whether Skoronski falls from Northwestern or a Paris Campbell from Ohio State.
Johnson.
I mean, Paris Johnson.
I know, I do that too.
Paris Campbell, that's wide receiver a while ago. I like that idea, and then getting a quarterback, or like we talked about for Bruce Feldman, you know, using your 11th overall pick to, if you want to get a wide receiver, or if, and I know you can't look at it like that, you just need to get the best person on your board, but if they could get a wide receiver or a lineman at 11 and then figure out how to also get back into the first round, maybe a little bit later, and get a guy like Hendon Hooker. I don't like the idea of trading a lot of assets to go up to 3 unless you believe, I mean, this is, you know, your guy through and through. No hesitations. Like, you're not reaching for him.
That and that's the thing, to, you know.
But I don't know if any of these guys are.
This is a I would say a draft as a whole. You know, when I said this to you during the break, I think this draft's going to be drunk. I just do, which is fun for us. But I do think you will see some reaching. I mean, you always do, but I think maybe more so than usual because, like, especially with the quarterback class, you just – I don't think you know.
I mean, there's five guys we talk about it. We talk about, right? So it's Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Hendon Hooker. These are the five guys that are talked about that will probably all go in the first round. We had one quarterback go in the first round last year. And, you know, guys like Malik Willis were actually talked about that, oh, my gosh, could this guy be a perennial talent? Could he be in the first round? Right? We could talk about that all the way up to leading up to the draft. But I truly do think that we could see all five of these guys go in the first round this year. What is the likelihood of all five of them actually panning out in the NFL?
Not
very, very little. I mean, I give it one guy, maybe one of them becomes a solid starting quarterback.
So on that line, along those lines, I was just thinking this. Okay, so the quarterbacks that we talk about the most, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Hendon Hooker. Those five. We think all five are going to go in the first round. We think.
Yeah.
To me, with everything that's kind of happened over the course of the last few weeks, I think Levis is more, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, I'm just saying if you're, for conversation's sake, is more likely to fall out of the first round than Hendon Hooker is. And I don't think it's very likely, but I think I could, like, if somebody does a nosedive on draft night, I think right now all signs are pointing to Levis because you're seeing him move down in mock drafts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he moved down. I think him and Hendon Hooker are kind of opposite, right? Hendon Hooker wasn't really viewed as high as he was towards the beginning of this process, and then they've kind of switched. Hendon Hooker's stock's gone up. His has gone down a bit. Watch the guy who drops to the second round or whatever will be the most successful, right? Or something like that. But I also think too, you know, a lot of where these prospects go depends on the organization they go to.
Absolutely.
Because, you know,
and I think we lose sight of that sometimes.
Okay, yeah, you get C.J. Stroud, you say he goes to the Texans, which have, you know, been struggling to figure out some things these last couple of years, ever since really Deshaun Watson wasn't playing for them. Been one of the worst teams in the league. You have a new head coach. I mean, the Panthers also have a new head coach in Frank Reich. They don't have a lot of weapons for their guy. I mean, and they have to start right away. They could, you know, yeah, be the first or second pick in this draft, but a guy like a Hendon Hooker or a Will Levis who go to a team later in the first round, maybe even early second, a team that has more weapons around them, a team that is better constructed, a better offensive line, say they sit a year, they could end up being more successful just based off of the scenario that they are drafted into.
Quickly, let's go to Chris in Atlanta that wants to weigh in. Chris, what's up?
Hey, Chris.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Michelle. You know, going back to last year, we thought, you know, Malik Willis, you know, Kenny Pickett, and all those other guys would be taken high in the first round, and only one was selected, and that was Kenny Pickett. So it's kind of interesting playing musical chairs with these quarterbacks. I wonder if it wouldn't be a bad idea for the Titans to sort of maybe trade back a little, and maybe pick up another draft pick, at least in the first round. That way, you could say, okay, we're going to trade out of the 11th spot, maybe, and just work with me on this, maybe go get Darnell Wright, you know, as offensive tackle, you know, later on in the draft. And if you're still out of the first round, maybe trade back in and go get Hendon Hooker. That way you can at least have your quarterback of the future. Oh, and you have a capable offensive tackle, you know, possibly blocking for him either on his blind side or on his front side, and maybe kind of work around that. That's sort of my thinking. I don't want to hear about what you guys have to think about that.
Wait, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
I don't know if Hendon Hooker would fall that far.
No, well, and I think he's saying moving back in.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Like, I don't know.
I think it all comes down to, on draft day, are there teams that are calling, trying to move up in the first round? Are there teams that are in the teens, in the 20s, trying to move up to that 11th pick to get their guy? I don't know. I mean, it depends on the circumstances, right? You can't just be like, hey, we're gonna plan on trading back. It has to be a team wanting to trade up for your 11th, which you are in an interesting position because you're right outside of the top 10. Whether a team's in love with the guy, whether a team wants a quarterback.
Yeah.
So
we'll get back into this because he just sparked a question that I'm going to bring up later in the show. But coming up next, we'll get to Greg Wyshynski, NHL on ESPN. The race is tight in the wild card right now, and it affects the Predators. We'll discuss that with him on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It's time for the Daily Power Play.
The score! A power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Cyril.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter, Nick Kieser with you. We say hello to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. And Greg, oh man, is this wild card race in the West fun? I am ready. I'm ready for the playoffs, but I think we're seeing playoff hockey already. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. We've been doing these conversations for most of the season, and I cannot believe this late in the season we are talking about this incarnation of the Nashville Predators being in a wild card race. It is nuts to me. I mean, all of the big bold-faced names missing from the lineup, the selling off at the trade deadline, the fact that the West has been so competitive and those teams seem to be moving up when the Predators are moving down. Man, it is astounding that we're in this part of the season still talking about the Predators being in playoff contention. I thought they'd have to, like, increase the number of playoff teams mid-season for Nashville to be in this conversation, but here we are.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, think about this. If I had come to you and at the beginning of the season said, hey, Greg, I just got back from the future, and on April 6th, the Predators, without Roman Josi, without Philip Forsberg, they've traded Matthias Ekholm, Mikael Granlund, Nino Niederreiter, and a few other things. They have a ton of other injuries, and they're playing rookies. They're 3 points out of a playoff spot. You would have looked at me going, like, you've been at Tootsie's.
Yeah, or that DeLorean scrambled your brain when you hit the capacitor because something's going on. Yeah, it's a remarkable story. And again, like, think about all of the levels of unlikeliness that have had to happen for them to be in this position. Beating the Boston Bruins, something that not a lot of teams have done this season at all. Winning that game against Vegas with Lekkonen in goal as Soros gets a break. Like, it's incredible these little moments along the way that have sustained them. On top of, like you said, the heroes being your Tommy Novaks and your Cody Glasses of the world, while, you know, they're waiting for Roman Josi to hopefully get back in the lineup at some time in the near future. It's just been a great run and a fun one. And, you know, we've talked in the past about how important it is to give young players this opportunity to not only carry the torch in the way that a lot of them have down the stretch, but also just get a taste of what it feels like to be in a playoff race. It helps immeasurably. And these, you know, these games coming up against teams that they're chasing in the wild card race, I think are going to be just that situation you wanted.
Well, and I don't want to put a ton of pressure on them because they're, you know, they beat Boston, but now they're playing one of the other top teams in the league in Carolina tonight. And look, Carolina's got, you know, stuff to play for. They're trying to win that division and put themselves in a good spot. But if they can somehow find a way to even just get a point out of this one tonight, I think it adds to the intrigue of this weekend when the Predators play both Calgary and Winnipeg head to head.
I love the idea of getting a point out of that game because that might be where the bar is set, considering how good Carolina is and how much they still have to play for. Like you said, I think they'd much prefer to see one of those wild card teams in the Eastern Conference versus having to play, say, the New York Rangers in the first round if the Devils end up catching them. But you know, the interesting thing about this is having those two games, the Jets and the Flames, coming up, which is just great. But the other thing that's really interesting about it is the math, because they do have a disadvantage if this thing does end up in a numerical tie in points with the teams that they're chasing as far as, you know, non shootout wins. So it's kind of almost better to keep this thing at an odd number, if we're being honest, because the tiebreaker does them no favors. But the bottom line is that just keep winning, right? I mean, I think you're correct in saying that while every game feels like it's a must-win, the one tonight is probably a little less must-win than the ones coming up.
Greg Wyshynski from ESPN on with us. Greg, when you take a look at this team right now, we've talked about all of the young guys making such an impact. Cody Glass, Tommy Novak, Luke Evangelista. I almost said Yusuf Parson, and he's hurt. How much do you credit Carl Taylor in Milwaukee on him being able to develop these guys and then being able to transition to the NHL? And then how much do you also credit John Hines this last month?
Yeah, Hines has done a great job. I mean, keeping this team motivated after, like we said, a moment in which it felt like they were waving the white flag as an organization with a bit of a trade deadline sell-off with you know, Ekholm and Janot both finding new homes. So to have him kind of, you know, give the opportunity to the younger players because he had to from an injury standpoint, but putting faith in them in big spots has been great. And you're right about the American Hockey League angle of this, too. I mean, you think about Novak coming up, I guess it was in December, and then ending up being around, like, you know, third or fourth in points on this team.
Yeah.
And just making an incredible impact. And goodness, like, two of the biggest wins they've had in this stretch were Tommy Novak games, as far as him being a multiple-point guy in those games. So, like, yeah, the work done in Milwaukee to prep these players for the National Hockey League and have them ready for these big situations can't be stressed enough.
We talk a lot about now, you know, when some of these veteran guys get healthy, how they're going to have a lot of different options. And especially since guys like Tommy Novak, who you just mentioned, Cody Glass, they've proven that they can play that center position. How do you view Ryan Johansson when he does get healthy and back on this roster? Do you think he could be a potential option for a buyout for the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, I'd have to check the numbers on what the money would lingering on the cap would look like in that situation. And obviously, you know, like we've talked about in the past, they were both looking, you know, checking their options on both Johansson and Duchesne in recent years as far as trying to move off those contracts. So it's, yeah, I mean, I think as you see this team kind of transition into whatever they're going to be next under obviously a new general manager, that's always going to be something on the table. But like you said, it's good to have options, and more importantly than anything else, for a franchise that kind of looked like they built a roster that had a very distinct expiration date as a contender, to now have a little bit of juice and a little bit of hope for the future has got to feel good for the Predators these days.
Greg Wyshynski is with us from ESPN. When you look at teams that are in what I believe to be a transition, I kind of look at the Washington Capitals, who've officially been eliminated, and I'm intrigued by them because Alex Ovechkin is always intriguing. And two, their head coach is Peter Laviolette. Now, I believe he's on a 3-year contract, and this is the last year of his deal. Do you think they could make a change there, and how do you view the Capitals moving forward?
I think they could only because of the contract situation there. And, you know, he's had a really nice run, I think, in Washington that clearly they might look for a cheaper, maybe younger, maybe different voice behind the bench for a team that's going to look a lot different next season. So two things about the Capitals. The first off is that they had a absolute ton of unrestricted free agents set to be off their contracts this summer. They traded some of them at the deadline. They re-signed some of them at the deadline, which was kind of a surprise in some situations. They still have a lot of cap room with which they can play. There's been a lot of talk around the organization of maybe this being the end of the run for them and Evgeny Kuznetsov and maybe trying to move him and his contract off the cap. So the bottom line is that this is going to be a different-looking Capitals team in a lot of ways next season. But the important thing is it's not going to be a team that will exist just to service Alex Ovechkin and his chase of Wayne Gretzky's record. I spoke with Ted Leonsis at the NHL Board of Governors meetings late last year, and we discussed this idea of what are the Capitals going to look like as Ovechkin reaches the sunset of his career. And part of the reason Ovi re-signed with Washington was this kind of pact that he made with Leonsis where The Capitals will remain a competitive team seeking to win a championship, and Ovechkin will dedicate himself to being as good as he possibly can be every season and not resign himself to just trying to, you know, pad his goal stats. So expect this team to try to build another contender, even though, you know, as we get to a point where all these guys, Carlson, Backstrom, Ovechkin, are getting older, they still want to contend while Ovechkin's on the roster.
It's going to be interesting to see. All right, real quick, I have to ask you, what'd you think of WrestleMania?
It was a great 2 days with kind of a bummer of an ending, but some amazing matches. And just the idea of it becoming this 2-day spectacle where it doesn't feel bloated, where you're satisfied with everything that goes on. It's great. But I got to tell you, man, like, a bit overshadowed with what happened behind the scenes with WWE now being combined with UFC into one big organization, and Vince apparently back at the helm. It's really strange times. I feel like there's been a lot of euphoria around that product in the last few months that maybe has been a bit undercut with the recent news away from the ring.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Vince always finds a way, it seems. Greg, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the conversation. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Greg.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
See ya. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joins us every Thursday at 9:45. We'll talk about tonight's game against Carolina a little bit more, and the Predators getting some help last night. We'll do that here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.